Gershi, how was your day? Gershi? Gershi? Uh-oh. Gershi? Gershi, please come out? Gershi, whatever the problem is, staying in your room behind the closed door is not going to solve it.
I'm sorry, Father. It's just that I had a terrible, terrible day.
Okay, I've had a few of those in my lifetime.
No, Tati, not as bad as mine.
Of course not. Mine is never as bad as yours, and yours is never as bad as mine.
What do you mean, Tati?
Well, you see, that's what life is all about. When something happens to me, it's always worse than when it happens to someone else. So therefore, when I had a bad day, it happened to me. And now that you had a bad day, it happened to you. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Not really.
Gershi, why don't you come out of that room where I can see you instead of peeking out of the door? And let's sit down over some cookies and milk and discuss what happened to you today.
But, you're not gonna understand. And I'm really not in the mood of talking.
Gershi, remember when we drove to Muncie last week and our car conked out on the way?
Well, what do you expect, Tati, from an old jalopy?
Derech Eretz, Gershi. Our car is a lot older than you. I think it's even older than me.
Sorry, Tati.
Well, anyway, how did we get out of it?
Well, we had luck. Uncle Chaim drove by and he gave us a lift.
No. Not luck, Gershi. I call it Hashgacha Pratis. And even if Chaim didn't happen to come by, plenty Yidden offered to help. Anyway, last week, Chaim's car broke down and I pushed him into the garage.
What does that have to do with my terrible day? I didn't get stuck anywhere.
It has everything to do with it. You see, it is a chesed of Hashem that we don't all break down at the same time. Sometimes my car pushes Chaim's car, and sometimes his car pushes mine. You see, Gershi, the world stands on the schus of chesed, and Hashem gives each and every one of us an opportunity to both give and take.
But, what does all this have to do with my terrible day?
One second, Gershi. You see, human beings are like cars. Sometimes we run well, and sometimes...
Oh, I know, Tati. Sometimes we overheat, like what happened to me today.
That's right, Gershi. Sometimes we run smoothly.
And sometimes, Tao, we honk our horns too loud, like what happened to me today. Sometimes we go forward, and sometimes we roll backwards.
I think you got the message, Gershi. Daigable Avish, you know what the Gemara tells us? If you have a worry on your heart, share it with someone. When you have a bad day, and you tell me about it, I can help you. And this way, when I have a bad day, I'll tell you about it, and you'll help me. Now, Gershi, looks to me like you're a little bit overheated and your horn is tooting too loud from the way you ran up to your room. So it's your turn to tell me, and it's my turn to listen.
It's just that whenever it seems that I try to make up my mind to be really good, I always run into more trouble than when I don't make up my mind to be good.
Well, naturally.
Naturally?
Sure.
But Hashem rewards us for our mitzvahs.
Oh, of course, Gershi. The reward for mitzvahs is beyond our imagination. Where a Baal Tshuva stands, even a complete righteous tzaddik cannot stand. But what, Gershi?
Then how come when I try to be good, things don't go my way? Today I tried to be good in school, and my Rebbe thought that I was talking, and I really wasn't talking, and he sent me to the...
Gershi. Maybe you have a history of talking during class, and that's why when somebody was talking next to you, your Rebbe thought that you were talking.
But why does it always happen when I make up my mind to learn?
You know something, Gershi? When the Rabbeinu Shem sees that someone is sincere, the Rabbeinu Shem wants to make sure that he's ready to tough it out.
What do you mean, Ta?
When a Yid makes up his mind, I am going to do tshuva. You're knocking on the door of Gan Eden. But the door of Gan Eden is thick. They don't let everyone in.
So what do?
You keep knocking. And the Satan comes and he tries to shoo you away.
Why does the Divine Shalom let him do that?
Because the Divine Shalom wants to test you to see if you're sincere. If you keep trying to be good, even though things don't go your way, and you keep on knocking, eventually they open up the door. But I like this, Gershi. I like this very much.
You like what very much, Tom?
I like the fact that things weren't going your way.
Why?
That means Hashem sent the Satan to try to stop you from coming in. If Hashem had to send the Satan to try to stop you from coming in, that means you were really close to coming in.
Tom.
Listen, Gershi, I know how you feel. Let me ask you a question. What would you like now? Cookies and milk, or a story?
Can I have both?
You're a smart boy. Yes, you can. There was a little town called Pianovechtya.
Penny who?
Pianovechtya. Listen, Gershi. It was a wonderful, wonderful town. The town had a Parnasiir, Reb Mordechai.
Parnasiir? What's that?
The Parnasiir was in charge of all the tzedakah in the town. He was usually a rich man, a well-learned man, and a well-respected man. He had to make many communal decisions, and it was very important he should be in close contact with the Rav and to listen to whatever he had to say. Now, Mordechai had a niece. Her name was Miriam. The day Miriam married Yitzchak, the whole town was simply jumping for joy. It was the most beautiful chasana you ever saw in your life. Ah, the whole Sheva Brachas. It was like Yom Tov for 7 days straight in the town. Reb Yitzchak was a big Talmud Chacham and a tremendous Baal Chesed. As the years passed, however, one thing marred their joy. They were not Zaycha to children. One day Yitzchak said, Miriam, our Shabbos tables sometimes are lonely.
I know, Yitzchak. The Rabbi Hashem is going to help.
Of course the Rabbi Hashem is going to help. But meantime, maybe the Rabbi Hashem wants us to fill up our Shabbos table.
With whom?
With guests. Miriam, if it's too hard for you, tell me. But I always dreamed of having a table full of Archim, full of guests. I know we have a guest from time to time, but it's so important to me. I feel...
Don't say another word. Of course. We'll have as many guests as can fit into our house.
Ta, how many guests were able to fit into their house?
Well, the first Friday night, Yitzchak brought home 10 people from shul. Next Friday night, 15, and then people started like falling off the benches on either side. You know what happened after a while? They rented a big, beautiful chasana hall.
A chasana hall?
That's right. Every Shabbos, the place was teeming with all sorts of archim, all sorts of guests from all over. Throughout the entire countryside, everyone knew if you needed a place to stay, you came to Yitzchak and you came to Miriam. And Miriam worked hard all week preparing for those guests. And not always was everyone very appreciative.
Miriam, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Anytime, Reb Matl.
But the rain was a little too sharp this week.
I'm sorry.
And the salt a little bit too salty.
I'm sorry.
And the ice cream a little bit too cold.
I'm sorry.
Just make sure you get it straight next time.
But that didn't stop Miriam. Most of the time, the people were appreciative.
I'll bet, that Miriam and Yitzchak were rewarded with tremendous riches and everything they ever wished for.
I'm afraid not. One day, Yitzchak was going to take care of something in town, and a drunk wagon driver came flying by. The people yelled,
Yitzchak, look out, look out!
But it was too late. The wagon driver came crashing right into him.
Oh no. What happened to Yitzchak?
For several days, the people were mispahal for him. But the gzeira of the Divine Shalom was that Yitzchak should return to Gan Eden and receive his reward for all of the mitzvahs that he did. And poor Miriam, she was left in Almana, a widow all alone.
And those poor Archim, Ta, now they didn't have where to stay.
No, I didn't say that. You're adding parts to the story on your own. No, no, no. Miriam continued to invite Archim. As a matter of fact, her uncle, Martha, was quite upset about this. Miriam, may I have a talk with you?
Yes, uncle.
This is not right. After all you've gone through, after all your suffering, you're still inviting guests? No, it must stop.
No, uncle, it must not stop. It must continue. This is what Yitzchak would want. This is what the Rabbeinu Shalalem wants.
But I am telling you,
the only one who would want me to stop is the Satan, and he's not going to stop me.
But look at all your suffering.
Where does it say that suffering is an excuse to stop doing mitzvahs? What's this whole world anyway?
Miriam, but it's not even within the guidelines of being proper for a woman who is alone to entertain all these guests.
Oh, I understand that. I've hired people to entertain the guests in the special little wedding hall. And I've built for myself a little cubicle, a little room all the way up on top, where I could look down and shep nachas from all the people that are eating. This is the only thing in my life that makes me happy.
Miriam, aren't you...
I don't ask questions. Whatever the Rabbeinu Shalom does is good, whether I understand it or not.
So your hachnosis, Archim, is going to continue the way it was before?
No.
Ah, you're going to stop.
I didn't say I'm going to stop. It won't continue the way it was before. I'm going to double it. I'm going to build an Achnasas Archim room twice the size.
Wow. I'll bet, Ta, that now Miriam was really, really rewarded.
Yes, she was. But you see, my son, we don't always understand how people are rewarded.
Don't tell me a wagon hit Miriam.
No. But Miriam began to not feel well. Each day she felt weaker and weaker. The greatest doctors were summoned. Her uncle spared no time, no money, no effort. He left no stone unturned. Doctor, what is going to be with my niece?
I'm sorry to tell you that your prognosis is not good.
Hoy. Rappa ye rappe. Doctors have a shlichus to heal, not to tell me bad news.
Well, there's not much else I can tell you.
Miriam, everything is going to be okay. The doctor said everything is going to be okay.
Uncle, don't lie to me. I heard what the doctor said. Whatever the Rabbeinu Shalalem does is good.
I'm trying to find more doctors.
You've turned over the country looking for doctors, Uncle. Perhaps a bracha from a tzaddik.
I've gone to many tzaddikim for brachas.
Uncle, one of my friends who visited me today told me that there is a tzaddik in town by the name of Reb Leib Soris. You know who that is.
Reb Leib Soris, yes. I've heard of him. He is officially considered one of the heads of the 36 tzaddikim.
Which 36 tzaddikim?
Well, you know, Miriam, in every generation there are 36 hidden tzaddikim. Reb Leib Soris is the head of the hidden tzaddikim. He travels from town to town and he takes care of them. Reb Leib Soris is a great man.
Let me go. Let me go and ask him for a bracha.
But you're too weak, Miriam. Wait. Let me go and see if I can perhaps ask the tzaddik to come here. Miriam, he's coming! He's coming. He agreed to come and see you.
Baruch Hashem.
Holy Tzaddik, here is my niece. I'm going to ask you a favor. Remain over here in the open doorway. But I would like to say some things to your niece in private. Keep the door open and stand over here. But further away enough so that you don't hear what I'm saying. Yes, I'll stand right here on the outside. No, on the inside. But just make sure that you don't hear what I'm saying. Of course.
Oh, holy tzaddik. When my husband passed away, there were people who told me to stop the Achnasas Archim. But I kept on doing it. I am a Kabbal HaKadosh Baruch Hu's His Gzeres Berotzai, and I will continue to do so. But can you please give me a bracha?
my daughter. I'm afraid the Shari Shemayim are locked.
What? What does that mean?
There is a gzeira that you are to join your husband in Olam Haba.
If that is the gzeira of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, then I must accept it. But is there anything I can do to be mevatel the gzeira? Did I not once learn that afilu cherev chadam eneches al tzavori shel adam, even if a sharp sword lies on the throat of a person, a yid should never give up hope?
Chas v'shalom, I would never tell you to give up hope. I would never tell anyone to give up hope. I am just saying we need a lot of rachmim and a lot of schusim. Ah! I have found a Pesach in Shemayim where our tefillahs could be answered.
Baruch Hashem.
But in order for you to be able to live, you have to accept upon yourself something now that I am going to tell you, which may appear strange.
Yes, Holy Tzaddik. Tell me. Tell me whatever it is. I'm willing to accept it. What is it?
I am going to suggest a shidduch for you. I cannot tell you exactly when the man is going to come, but at one point, he will come. At that point, I would like you to marry him.
Oh, Holy Tzaddik, if you are suggesting that person as a shidduch for me, surely I know it is a shidduch that is intended to be. I don't consider that a test. I consider that a bracha in its own right.
But wait, I have to tell you one more thing.
Yes?
The man that I am going to send you is going to be the most despicable, ugly, disgusting-looking individual you ever saw in your whole life. He will be so ugly, people will have a difficulty standing in his presence.
Oh, but is it a physical ugliness or ugly in his midas?
No. His midas will be fine and polished and beautiful. The ugliness will only be on the outside.
In that case, Holy Tzaddik, I am still maskim. I still agree to marry him. But I have one question.
Yes?
How will I know that that is the man? I mean, every time an ugly person comes, I'm going to think that it's him.
You see this mirror laying over here near the bed?
That little hand mirror, yes.
Keep this mirror next to you. Should such a man come and you think that indeed it may be him, lift the mirror and look inside. If you see my image there.
The image of you, the tzaddik?
If you see my image there, then you will know that that is the man.
Fine, no problem.
One more thing.
Yes?
Under no circumstances should you reveal to anyone what I told you now.
Yes, thank you.
What happened, Father? Did this ugly man come? Who was he? And what did her uncle say?
Wait, Gershi. I'm going to stop this story now and go over to a different story.
I hate when you do that.
Now, Gershi, a little patience, please.
Okay, I'm sorry.
There was a man by the name of Chaim Zambel. Everybody loved Chaim Zambel. When he walked down the street, everybody ran over to him to say good morning to him.
Was he rich?
No. Well, he was. Rich in his midos. Rich in his smile. Chaim Zambel and his family were poor, but in a way they were considered to be the luckiest people in town. Then one night, terrible tragedy struck.
Oh no. What happened?
Fire. Fire raged through the whole village. Chaim Zambel and his family were trapped upstairs. Chaim Zambel did his best to try to rescue his family, but it was too late. The entire house collapsed.
Oh no.
The next day, everyone cleaned up the rubble from the fire.
And what happened to Chaim Zambel's family?
Well, Gershi, The Rabbanu Shalom decided it was time for them to come to Gan Eden also.
Everyone?
They thought everyone. Then it came to Chaim Zanvil's turn.
You mean they found his body?
They thought so. All right, let's keep digging over here. Listen, it's just a terrible tragedy. I know, but Baruch Hashem, think about the entire town that was saved. In a way, this house sort of blocked the fire from spreading to any of the other houses. All right, let's shovel a little bit more. Ah, what happened? I think I found Chaim Zanvil. Oy, Nebuch. All right, let's wait. Wait, I think he's still alive. I'm putting a feather in front of his nose, and I see that it is shaking back and forth. Baruch Hashem, he's still alive. Alive. But look at him. Look at him, his skin. It's like it has been burnt off. It's horrible. Oy, Nebuch. Stop it, Oy, Nebuch. Let's help him. Quick, let's get him up on this stretcher.
I think I just lost the appetite for my cookies.
I'm sorry, Gershi.
What happened?
Well, Chaim Zanvil was taken to the local hospital. When he found out what happened to his family, that alone made him very, very sick. After a while, they released him.
Was he all better? Was he all healed?
I'd love to tell you yes, but I'm afraid that wasn't the case. Chaim Zanvil left the hospital walking on two canes, limping, and his face had been terribly burnt beyond recognition. The people who used to be friends with him would look at him and they would say, "Oh, Chaim Zanvil, Either they would faint, or they would simply turn around and run away.
Poor Chaim Zanvil. How long could he live like that in the town?
He didn't live in that town very long. He realized that the people were very uncomfortable. He would come into shul and everybody would like hold their stomachs and go running out. Chaim Zanvil said, "I can't do this. I can't do this. No one can even look at me. I'm going to leave town tonight. I'll take whatever I own, my talis and my tefillin and my wandering sticks, and I'll just wander off. Oh, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. I Rabbeinu Shel Olam, why? Why did you leave me alive? What am I supposed to do with a life like this? Oh, no, I have no right to complain. Bal korchach atochai. Every breath I have to thank Hashem for." At night, Chaim Zanvil would come to a town, and he would sleep in what was called the Hegdish.
The Hegdish town? What's that?
Like the local place where all the archi parchi sort of slept.
You mean the people that just floated around?
"Okay, this way. You can take that bed over there."
Everybody just stood up and stared at Chaim Zanvil. Some people made some very not nice remarks.
"A monster! A monster's here! Everyone, run for your lives!"
"Yoy, what happened to you? You overdosed on Chaim."
Chaim Zanvil was already used to the abuse. More edel and fine people were nice to him, but he can tell even they suffered when they looked at him. Each night, Chaim Zanvil would lift his hands, or whatever was left of them, and he would say, "Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, what should I do? Where should I go? I'm willing to fulfill your ratzon. I'm willing to live out my years in this life, but tell me where to go, tell me what to do. Give me guidance."